We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Religion today remains deeply consequential, affecting the values, the actions, the choices, the worldview of people in every walk of life on every continent, and obviously also here at home.
Once you unleash the demon, if you will, of euthanasia, it never stops growing, or as I put it, it's like the universe, the culture of death never stops expanding.
Luther also says, never think of the law as something that is simply done away with. What does the life of the Christian look like? What do good works look like? Well, of course, they look like what the law demands.
If you have ever had an encounter with these young men, they call them elders, but these young men who are nicely dressed, they come to the door, and they come representing the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and they follow their script. The first thing that they want to talk to you about, after perhaps a little small talk, is going to be the first vision. They're going to introduce you to Joseph Smith. They're going to ask you if you wouldn't mind them reading about Joseph Smith's first vision and those who witnessed, or at least witnessed his account of those things from one of the documents of Mormonism. They're very intent upon talking about what Joseph Smith claimed to have seen as a 14-year-old boy in the hills of New York as he was seeking wisdom and seeking guidance from God. Now, he claims at one time to have seen the Father and the Son as human beings standing and telling him that, well, Christianity had gone astray. That's the basis of Mormonism, by the way, and that's why those young elders that stand at your door are so intent upon talking about Joseph Smith and that first vision. Well, the Mormons have been talking about the first vision as well. There's a recent statement by a Mormon leader on Joseph Smith's first vision and some of the discrepancies in how Joseph Smith told that story. We're going to be talking about it with Bill McKeever of Mormonism Research Ministry. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Monday afternoon, the 2nd of May. After our conversation with Bill McKeever, Pastor Brian Wolfmiller will join us. We continue our series, Top 3 Verses Today. Baptism saves, the top 3 verses for that. You can join us over the next hour with your questions and comments. 1-877-623-6943 is our call-in number. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Our Twitter address, @IssuesETC, and the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. Bill McKeever is a regular guest. He joins us to talk about a recent statement by a Mormon leader on Joseph Smith's first vision. Bill, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Good to be with you.
How important is Joseph Smith's so-called first vision to Mormon claims in theology?
It's extremely important. In fact, the first vision, in my opinion, and I think in the opinion of several others, is one of two most important events in Mormon history, that and the coming forth of the Book of Mormon. But let me answer your question by using the words of President Gordon B. Hinckley, the 15th president of the church. He said this. He said, either Joseph talked with the Father and the Son, or he did not. If he did not, we are engaged in blasphemy. That's how important it is. And that's an interesting word that Hinckley uses. He doesn't say, we've got it wrong a little bit. We are engaged in blasphemy. That's pretty serious.
So who claims to have seen this vision of the Father and the Son, or, and we'll get into the details here, or just the Father, who claims to have seen this vision other than Joseph Smith?
Joseph Smith was the only one there. He claims in the official account, which is known as the 1838 account, and that's the account that's found in the modern editions of the Pearl of Great Price in the Joseph Smith history. He claims he was concerned about which church was true. He read James 1:5 in the New Testament, and he takes that verse that talks about, if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, and he decides to go out into the woods near his home and pray about the matter, wondering, as I said, which of all the churches were true.
And what does he claim to have seen in the 1838 account?
In the 1838 account, he claims to see both the Father and the Son standing above him in the air. And when he asks which of all the churches are true, he claims that he was told by the personages that all the churches were wrong, that their creeds were an abomination, and that their professors were corrupt. This is still a position that the Mormon Church has to this day, although in a more public setting, if a Mormon was to talk with, let's say, an evangelical Christian, they would probably try to soften the blow a little bit by saying, well, we don't believe that your church doesn't have any truth. It's just that we believe that we have all the truth. You have some truth.
Okay, what other accounts did Joseph give of the same vision, and do they differ substantially in the claim?
Well, I think one that this article was trying to bring out was his 1832 diary, where Joseph Smith claims that he only saw Jesus. His whole reason for going in that particular story was he was concerned whether or not his sins were forgiven. So in his diary, he writes how he had a vision of Jesus, and it's very clear that that's who he's talking about, and he gets this assurance that his sins are forgiven, but there's no mention of God the Father at all. Now, they would say in this article that, well, the fact that he didn't mention God the Father here, but he mentions it later, actually strengthens the story. I would strongly disagree with that, because what makes Joseph Smith's vision so unique, and I think in the eyes of many Latter-day Saints even so compelling, is the fact that he saw two personages. And according to this vision, Mormons get this idea that the Father and the Son are two distinct gods, two of three gods within the Godhead. So Mormonism certainly would deny the Trinity, but they hold to a more tritheistic view of the Godhead. And that's probably why Hinckley used the word blasphemy. He knew that if this wasn't true, and here Mormons are believing in tritheism, that they have a serious error when it comes to who God is, according to the Bible.
So the story that occasions our conversation from the Salt Lake Tribune, has quotes from Richard J. Maines. Who is he, and what is he saying about the discrepancies?
I'm not really familiar with him all that much. He's a part of the First Quorum of the 70, and that's about it. But I'm not really familiar with a lot of his statements or a lot of his writing, so I really couldn't tell you.
He's making a claim here, and it's kind of a classical apologetic claim that Christians often make about the New Testament accounts, that, well, if they all walked in lockstep, you'd think that there was some sort of collusion here in all of their details. The fact that there's difference in emphasis and details only renders Joseph Smith's claims more authentic. Does that hold water for you as you look at the claims Joseph Smith made?
Well, I understand what he's trying to say in this article when he says some have mistakenly argued that any variation in the retelling of the story is evidence of fabrication. And I would agree to a certain extent that certainly I haven't said that. Some may mistakenly argue that way, but I understand what he's saying, and I understand what he's probably referring to when he talks about the New Testament. For instance, on the Damascus Road, when the Apostle Paul, at the time was Saul, okay, has his encounter with the risen Jesus, there's some differences in the English as to whether or not the people that were there that witnessed this bright light either heard a voice or didn't hear a voice. Well, the Greek actually solves that problem, because one of the Greek words that's used in one of the accounts has to do with understanding what was said, not in the hearing of a sound. So that's easily correctable if someone thinks, for instance, that that might be a contradiction. The problem I think we have with Joseph Smith is he's giving us some differences that you wouldn't probably expect from a person who's having an encounter such as this? How do you leave out, for instance, the fact that God the Father shows up, especially since in your own Joseph Smith translation that you find in Exodus 33, verse 20, that no man can see God and live? That's what Joseph Smith's translation says in Exodus 33:20. So this becomes especially profound in the minds of Latter-day Saints, because think about it. There's a lot of people who have claimed over the years to have a vision of Jesus. Even many Muslims today who have converted to Christianity have done so because they claim to have had either a vision of Jesus or seen Jesus in a dream. So that's not all that unique, you would say, in those cases. But here we have Joseph Smith claiming to see God the Father, something that even his own Bible says should not happen. And yet we find in his earlier accounts, God the Father is suspiciously missing. I think that's too big of an item to leave out of the story.
And if this is, so let's walk with Hinckley's assessment here. It's possible that one of the visions is true and the other one has been kind of tweaked a little bit. But he's making the same claim about the same vision, isn't he? There's no way of interpreting this as Joseph Smith getting his visions mixed up.
Well, that's even questionable. My personal opinion, I think he made the whole thing up, because he talks about this revival that allegedly took place in 1820. The revival he describes did not take place in 1820. That can be verified. The revival he describes takes place in 1824. But the problem with this timing, as it is in that account, is that you can't call that the first vision if God the Father and Jesus supposedly showed up in 1824, because Moroni, the angel that tells him about the Book of Mormon, supposedly shows up in 1823. That would make the Moroni encounter the first vision. But the church won't change the date because they know they have a problem if they change the date of the first vision to 1824. So they leave it at 1820, even though the historical data really doesn't fit that time frame. I guess they're just playing the odds, knowing that most Mormons probably won't check it out and probably wouldn't care. And that's unfortunate, because I think that's a huge mark against this whole story. When he talks about in his 1832 diary that he sees Jesus, you have to remember, nobody in the early years of Mormonism knew anything about any such type of first vision. Joseph Smith wasn't telling anybody about this. Nobody really talks about this in the early years when Joseph Smith supposedly had this first vision. I mean, you're talking about if this happened in 1820, why don't we hear anything about this for over a decade at least? Because his 1832 diary, you're talking 12 years right there alone. And then the 1838 account, it finally gets published. So we're talking almost two decades now. And this is why I think the Mormon Church has had difficulty finding any accounts like this of the first vision in anyone's journals or diaries at the time that it supposedly happened. Now, certainly a lot of Mormons have written about it in retrospect in their diaries and journals, but we don't know of anything extant that talks about it during the time it supposedly happened.
Was Smith talking about the second vision concurrent with when it allegedly occurred?
The second vision, meaning when he meets Moroni?
Yes.
No, well, some might think that, because he does talk about in one account where he saw angels, plural, and doesn't mention either the Father or the Son. But usually when it's talking about the first vision, even by the accounts of some of the other leaders after that time frame, and this is confusing too, Todd, because even when Mormon leaders are recounting this story, they're not always recounting it the same way. For instance, Brigham Young said that the Lord did not show up, but he did send his angel. And so even they didn't seem to have a concrete understanding of what took place on this day in the spring of 1820, as they're led to believe today. It is quite confusing. There's no doubt about it. Confusing to the point where I don't think the argument being used in this article in the Salt Lake Tribune really holds water. It may It may be enough to calm the fears of the faithful Latter-day Saint that might see that it is in fact a blip or a glitch, a scratch in their history. But I think anyone who reads this and wants to look deeper into the First Vision accounts and the story that the Church is telling today, I think they're going to be troubled by what they find. I know, because a lot of Latter-day Saints have been troubled by what they find. This is why I'm almost glad that in the article, it talks about M. Russell Ballard, who currently serves as a Mormon apostle, urging LDS seminary teachers to, quote, know the content in these essays, and he's referring to gospel topics essays that are now posted on LDS.org. He's urging them to know the content in these essays like you know the back of your hand. I am encouraging every Mormon to read the Gospel Topics essays that they've been posting since late 2013, because in these essays, the Mormon Church has been much more transparent, quote-unquote. They're not as transparent as I would like to see them be, but still, they are admitting to a lot of things that the Church has been reluctant to admit before in an official capacity. I think most Mormons reading these Gospel Topics essays are going to be very troubled by what they read, as have been many Latter-day Saints who have read them.
This is, I was going to call it the tip of the iceberg, but it isn't, because it's such a foundational claim to the very existence of Mormonism from the very claimed beginnings of Mormonism.
Yeah, it's a huge issue. In fact, when I read you that statement by Gordon Hinckley saying that if it didn't happen, we're engaged in blasphemy, Hinckley said something else that was very similar. He said, if it did not, then this work is a fraud. Again, that shows how serious this First Vision account is, and this is one of the things that we try to do here at MRM is deal with these two very important issues of Mormon history, the First Vision and the Gold Plates. If those two stories, if a Latter-day Saint can see that those two stories did not happen the way the Church has been telling it, we find that many times that individual Latter-day Saint will leave the Mormon Church.
So that was kind of my next question, and I think it kind of comes to the fact that I think the last time I was visited by Mormon elders at the house, and this is probably more than a decade ago, they wanted to talk the First Vision. They wanted to open up the beginning of the Book of Mormon or whatever text they had in their hands and talk about this vision and Joseph's experience there in the woods as a young man. And
right.
if there's doubt cast upon this in the minds of those young Mormons, they have a hard time making that case, which they do at every door they encounter.
You're absolutely correct. You see, the reason why the missionaries are instructed to talk about the First Vision is because within that First Vision account is the statement by one of these, you know, deities that allegedly appeared to Joseph Smith. We don't know exactly which one was doing the talking. But Smith claims he was told, again, that all the churches were wrong. You see, there has to be this idea of what they call this great apostasy. Because even Mormon leaders have admitted, B.H. Roberts, being a 70 and a church historian from many years ago, said that if there was no great apostasy of the Christian religion, there would be no need for the church to exist, the Mormon church to exist. You see, that's the foundation of Mormonism. If there was no great apostasy, there would be no need for God to restore the true church back to the earth and to restore the gospel as understood by that church. If it's always been here, there's no need for Mormonism. So they can never really get rid of what the First Vision is telling them as far as all the churches being wrong, the creeds of the Christians being an abomination, and all the professors, which would include all the pastors, all the theologians, all Bible teachers, that encompasses a lot of people, but they are all corrupt. At least their teachings are corrupt.
Bill McKeever is founder of Mormonism Research Ministry based in Draper, Utah. He's author of several books, including In Their Own Words, a collection of Mormon quotations, and Mormonism 101. You'll find links to these books and to Mormonism Research Ministry at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Bill, thank you again.
Thanks for having me.
When we come back, Pastor Brian Wolfmiller will join us. We'll be doing our series Top 3 Verses today, Baptism Saves. Stay tuned.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
You can support the boys' basketball program at Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois, by entering a team into our annual Golf Scramble fundraise. It's Saturday, May 28th at Oakbrook Golf Course in Edwardsville. Hi, this is Anthony Smith, head boys' basketball coach at Metro East Lutheran High School. Join me and fellow Knights for a Golf Scramble, May 28th at Oakbrook Golf Course. For more information, send me an email, anthony.smith@melhs.org. Thanks for your support.
What would you say if someone asked you to explain the Trinity? Would you begin with Scripture, the creeds, or some clever analogy? And how are Christ and the gospel at the center of this fundamental Christian teaching? Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Carl Beckwith has written a new book in the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatic series. It's titled The Holy Trinity. You can save $5 by pre-ordering The Holy Trinity at logia.org, L-O-G-I-A.org.